Next in the line of importance, I would say today, this is having a very far-reaching importance, that is EPR, Extended Producer Responsibility. Now, basically, let us try to first of all understand what is the meaning of Extended Producer Responsibility. It basically means that those items which could subsequently form a hazardous waste for manufacturer or producer of those particular items, there is an extended responsibility. That means the manufacturer or producer of those items have got an additional responsibility over and above the manufacturing and selling the goods to the consumers. The biggest example over here is the mobile phone that you are having in your hands. Yes, even now you may be using that mobile phone. But do you know that it is a very serious waste hazard? Not only as a waste, but even by your handling, the magnetic waves is affecting your body in a very indirect fashion. But it's a greater hazard when, after a few years, you dispose it off and it is being thrown into some dump. And look at the situation of thousands and lakhs of such defunct mobile phones dumped in a particular dumping yard, giving out toxic material which affects the entire environment. It is affecting the people staying around that particular place. That becomes a responsibility of the producer or manufacturer, that he has got to ensure that such hazardous wastes are not created, or they pay additionally for protecting the environment. This is the basic meaning of extended producer responsibility. The EPR helps to address the growing problem of waste management, especially the e-waste or electronic waste, that is used electronics, which contains materials that cannot be safely thrown away with regular household trash. Regular household trash are all degradable, biodegradable. They merge with the earth, but that doesn't happen with the electronic waste. EPR encourages manufacturers to design environmentally friendly product. That is point number one. By holding producers responsible for the costs of managing their products at end of the life. You know, by this yardstick, sometime back, government came about with a ruling that those who are using plastic packaging material, when they sell the goods to the consumer, they have got to ensure that on a daily basis, the consumer gives back the plastic packaging to the processors, to the manufacturers, exchanging, and by exchanging some discount was being given, etc., etc. But then subsequently it was found that it is not feasible at all. So via medias are now coming into play. And this EPR is a strategy of waste management designed to promote the integration of environmental costs associated with the goods throughout their life cycles into the market price of the goods. That means the price of the goods has got an added cost, and that addition amount goes to the protection of the environment. So, mind you, when you are buying your electronic product, you are not only paying for that electronic product, but you are also paying a certain percentage value added onto that product, which helps the protection of the environment. EPR highlights chemicals found in e-waste that are dangerous to human health and environment. I'll give you only some few examples. There are so many other chemicals which are hazardous, but some of them I'm giving you with some examples. You know, lead found on screen of phone. Your phone screen is having a lead content. TV monitors, etc., they are having lead content. And that lead can damage your kidneys, your nerves, your blood vessels, your bones, your reproductive organs, and even your muscle. Still, in spite of that, you are using it. Next, mercury. Mercury is used in all these fluorescent bulbs, your fluorescent tube lights, flat screens of TVs and laptops. And this mercury can damage the kidneys and the nervous system. Look at the cables. There are brominated flame retardants added to the cables. Now, previously, cables were all only plastic coated wire. But it was found that this ordinary plastic coating of the wire entails that in case of short circuit or in case of the internal wire friction with each other, entire cable used to catch fire very fast. And therefore, the plastic has been mixed with a certain bromine to retard the flame production. So they are known as brominated flame retardants, which are added to the cables and plastic cases. And this bromine can cause cancer, disruption of liver function, and nerve damages also. Cadmium. All batteries, whether you are having your, each phone is definitely having a battery. Cadmium, which is found in the batteries, they can cause kidney damage and also cancer. Of course, today, I think more and more batteries are coming, lithium batteries. Lithium batteries are supposed to be long-lasting, but I don't know, one day or some form of science may show that that lithium is also a hazard for you. It may also come under EPR. Now, these are some of the items which I am just trying to give you an idea of the applicability of the EPR as extended producer liability. As a corollary to EPR is the BIS, Bureau of Indian Standards Act of 2016. The Bureau of Indian Standards is the authority for formulation, recognition, and promotion of Indian standards. You know, previously we had AGMARC and ISI marks, Indian Standard Institution marks, etc., etc. Now that is all gone away because those are all voluntary. Now we have the BIS standards, which has been enforced looking to the EPR requirements. The Act brings compulsory certification of any goods or articles of any industry, process, system or service for the protection of human, animal or plant health, safety of the environment or prevention of unfair trade practices or even national security. These are the basic requirements under the BIS Act. The Indian standards, yes, they are voluntary. They are not compulsory. And their implementation depends on adoption by concerned parties. Those manufacturers who want to declare their products to be as a superior quality product, they will declare that our products are as per BIS number so and so. That means they are following the BIS code as far as the manufactured product is concerned. Safety standards are being built up into that product as per the BIS standards. It's not necessary that all manufacturers have got to follow BIS. It is all voluntary. But those who declare it on their package, the BIS standard number, for them it is compulsory that they have followed these standards as far as that particular product is concerned. Otherwise, voluntary means not necessary that you do. But the Bureau also has a conformity assessment scheme for any goods, articles, process, system or service to any Indian standards. And BIS may also establish a standard mark for certain product groups. Yes, for certain products, there is a compulsory standard required to be maintained. And there, the BIS standard becomes compulsory. Other than those goods, yes, it can be voluntary. But for certain goods, there is a compulsion. A person may apply for license or certificate if the goods, articles, process, system or service conforms to the Indian standards. If your product is following as the Indian standards, yes, you apply for license or certificate and declare the number on the package. The Director General may grant a license to apply a BIS number, that is the standard mark, during the operation of the certificate of conformity or license. And they are required to be determined by the regulations applicable for those particular products. But the Act has also made it mandatory for hallmarking of precious metal articles like gold and silver, etc. Here, as on date today, all precious metals, all jewelry items, they have got to necessarily carry the hallmark declared on each article of jewelry. Without declaring the hallmark number, hallmark on that particular jewelry, they cannot be sold by any jeweler. That basically means that any jewelry item, especially this is for you ladies, any jewelry item that you want to purchase, number one, you have got to ensure that you purchase it from a shop which has been registered under that hallmark BIS scheme. And then when you buy the jewelry, you've got to inspect whether that hallmarking is there or not. Hallmark declared on that jewelry piece. Each piece has got to declare. That ensures the purity level of that particular jewelry item. It requires precious metal articles or other goods or articles to be marked with the hallmark or standard mark. This has now become compulsory. It is also compulsory that goods should be sold only through outlets certified by the Bureau. After such goods or articles have been assessed for conformity to the relevant standards by testing and marking centers, and then only they are marked with hallmark or standard mark. This is the requirement for all precious items like jewelry, gold, silver, etc. The other major products are all electronic and information technology goods. They are part of the BIS standards compulsory marking. Under the electronic and information technology goods requirement for compulsory registration order of 2012. Here, this order is based on the principle of EPR, extended producer responsibility. And as per this order, no person shall manufacture or store for sale, import, sell or distribute electronic and information technology goods like mobile phone, solar photovoltaic cells, systems, laptops, printers, microwave ovens, television sets, etc., all similar electronic products which do not conform to the Indian standards as specified in this particular order. Manufacturers of these products are required to apply for registration from BIS. After getting their product tested from BIS recognized labs. That means manufacturers of all these electronic items are now required to register themselves and obtain the BIS specific number applicable, and their standards of their particular product has got to be in conformity with this order. Next, we will look at the Livestock Importation Act of 1898. And this act regulates, restricts, and prohibits import of live animals. Here, importers of live animals have to obtain a license from DGFT. This is compulsory now. License is issued after conducting a risk analysis as far as the animal is concerned. An import of livestock product is allowed subject to sanitary import permit certifying India's sanitary requirements. That means these animals are free from any specific diseases of the animals. Sanitary import permits must be obtained prior to shipping from the country of origin. And the department issues the permits for livestock products based on import risk analysis of the livestock products. That basically means that the person, while applying for the license, has got to ensure that he obtains this permit, and for obtaining the permit, he proves that the animal which is being imported is free from all diseases. We look at the Prevention of Corruption Act. And what is corruption? It has not been defined anywhere in the Act at all, but it is shown under Section 7(1), all offenses relating to public servant being bribed. That means all bribes that you pay to a public servant is coming under the Prevention of Corruption Act. Then 7A is taking undue advantage to influence public servant by corrupt or illegal means or by exercise of personal influence. Yes, you'll say, I know the such and such officer and I'll get your work done. You give me something, I'll give it to him. That's putting your influence to get a certain work done illegally. Offense relating to bribing a public servant. Offense relating to bribing a public servant by a commercial organization. And here, person in charge of commercial organization to be guilty of the offense. And then, public servant obtaining undue advantage without consideration from person concerned in proceeding or business transacted by the public servant. That means he is required to do his official work, but for that official work, he takes something from the concerned person for which the work is being done. And we have punishment for abatement of the offenses. That means those who are helping the public servant in this endeavor. Here, the public servant may not directly take it, but he will just say, okay, you go and meet such and such person. And then when you meet that such and such person, he'll say, give me this to be given to that person. And then he'll wave to the public servant and public servant will do your work. This is abatement of the offenses. And then repeatedly doing it is criminal misconduct by a public servant. And then there are various types of punishment for habitual offenders. You know, once they commit a particular conduct under this Prevention of Corruption Act, they are arrested, released out on bail, because most of the punishment are all bailable offenses. And then once he's out on bail, then the case is dragged on for a number of years, maybe 5, 10, 15 years. He comes back, again he repeats that offense. Again comes out on bail, again repeats the offense. So such type of people are known as habitual offenders. And for such habitual offenders, there is an enhanced level of punishment under the Prevention of Corruption Act. Punishment for any public servant or any person who gives or promises to give an undue advantage to a public servant. What are the punishments? Let us see stage-wise. First, it is jail for 3 years, which may be extended to 7 years and fine. That means minimum 3 years. It can be extended up to 7 years and also a fine attached. Of course, this will not be applicable if the person is compelled to give such undue advantage and he reports the matter to the law enforcement authority or investigating agencies within a period of 7 days from the date of giving. This basically means that if some officer compels you to give him something for doing that work, and by virtue of the urgency, you do give him some consideration, get your work done, and then within 7 days you go and complain to a law enforcement agency, then you would not be held guilty as far as that offense is concerned. Of course, save and otherwise, where Prevention of Money Laundering Act is concerned, the provisions of the Criminal Law Amended Ordinance of 1944 shall apply to attachment, administration of the attached property, and execution of order of attachment or confiscation of money or property procured by means of an offense under this particular act. This basically means that Prevention of Money Laundering Act has now been applied to prevention of corruption if they have been detected at a very late stage and the concerned public servant has amassed wealth which he cannot prove that it is his earned money. His property is attached, the money is attached, forfeited, taken over by the government under a criminal law amended ordinance. Next, we will now look at CITES. CITES is not an act or rule or regulation in India, but it is an international convention of the United Nations Security Council, UNSC. This convention relates to international trade in endangered species of wild fauna and flora. That means wild life, animals, or plant, environmental plant. They are all protected species under this convention. And this CITES works by subjecting international trade in specimens of selected species to certain controls. There are controls applied to the species which are endangered species. And here all import, export, re-export and introduction from the sea, because even the sea items are endangered species, are covered by the convention and has to be authorized through a licensing system. That is, movements are required to be authorized, positions are required to be authorized by an authority. Each party to the convention, now mind you, who are the parties to the convention? This is a UNSC, United Nations Security Council convention. India is a party. Most of the countries of the world are a party to this particular convention, and that is why they have got to make it applicable in their country. So, each party to the convention must designate one or more management authorities in charge of administrating that licensing system and one or more scientific authorities to advise them on the effects of trade on the status of the respective species. That means they are required to be monitored regularly, scientifically, through a licensing system. Let us now look at some of the items. Of course, the list is a very, very, very vast list. For animals, is more than 30 to 40,000 animals. Even for plants, more than 15 to 20,000 plants, etc. But I'm just giving you some small example. Wildlife, that is wild animals, you've got the red panda, you've got the gorilla, you've got the Asian elephant, you've got the African elephant, you've got rhinoceros, you've got the great white shark, you've got the American black bear. These are all endangered species of animals, huh? Then you have got the African civet, and you've got the alligator snapping turtle. Very small list I'm showing you. Let's look at the plant. All angiosperms, that is flowering plants, all flowering plants. Then all conifers, cycads, and allies. These are special kinds of plants. They are also known as ornamental plants. All types of ferns and fern allies. You will find many people like to decorate their homes with these ferns, but actually they are an endangered species. Then all types of mosses and liverworts. You know, sometimes mosses people like to eat. It is, some of them are edible, but No, it's not allowed. They are also endangered species. This is a very small example I'm giving you for plants. Well, friends, thank you. I don't know, like it or not. Yes, there is a compliance level. You have to comply. Thank you.